This is Evolutionary Radio. This is your host, Trevor Caritzen. As always, we're bringing you the brightest minds in the health and fitness industry. As always, my co-host, Steve Smee, is joining us.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
We've got another really good guest lined up for you guys. Joining us today is IFBB Pro, Troy Brown.
Good afternoon. Well, greetings. Good day, wherever you're calling from, wherever you are in the world. It's a pleasure to be on this podcast. Thank you for inviting me, Trevor. Much appreciated, my friend.
So, Troy, I love your accent. All of our female listeners, man, they're gonna love this show. My first question for you is, so you turned pro in England. Is that correct?
That's correct. I turned pro in 2006. October 6, 2006 is when I turned pro. And it was a life-changing moment. I thought my life was going to change. And I'll probably dive into that a little bit more later on. But yes, you're right. 2006 is when I turned professional as an IFBB professional bodybuilder.
So what made this new IFBB pro English boy move to Canada? Do you just really like the cold?
Well, at the time I was really good. I was good friends with Flex Lewis, and I know that he just moved to Reno in Nevada, and he was saying to me, you should move to North America, you know, build your career. And that's where the companies are. That's where you'll get sponsorship. And I didn't think at the time to move into Canada. I actually met a Canadian lady. And she was originally going to move to England, but we thought for my career, as I just turned pro, it would be a good idea for me to move to Canada. Didn't realize it was going to be that cold, but that was in 2007 when I moved over, and it was freaking cold, guys. I mean, I'd never experienced temperatures minus 50, minus 45 on a consistent basis. And that was in 2007, even while getting ready for a show. So you can imagine walking around Edmonton, Alberta, which is a very, very cold place, and your body fat sitting around 5-6%, and you're having to, you know, function and get around and do life chores, so to speak, in that crazy, crazy weather. So yeah, it was a very interesting time. And I actually had a contract with a couple of companies. I had a contract with Ormax, and also had a little spell with MuscleTech as well while I was when I lived in Alberta in Canada.
So this is a really exciting episode for me, because you're actually part of the reason I got into bodybuilding, Troy. Is that you were training at Hardcore Gym. I was pretty young. I think I was like 16 or 17. I don't think you were training there regularly. I think you were just training there occasionally, or we were going at different times. So they didn't see you there that often. But I remember watching you train back, and you were wearing this big yellow t-shirt. Like, it was very, very baggy. So you couldn't really see your physique, but you just had like the most jacked forearms ever. And you're with your training partner, and you were doing weighted pull-ups, and you had, I think, 45-pound plates strapped to your waist, and you're just busting out pull-ups, but like perfect form, not those like CrossFit pull-ups, you know, where guys are like swinging and it almost looks like they're gonna hurt themselves. Like, it was like perfect form pull-ups. I think you did like 15 or 16, and your training partner was like counting them out. I just remember seeing that, and I was like, wow, that is so badass. And it was just like, I'll never forget that. And I don't know if you've ever had any like those like moments growing up where you just see this like photo in the magazine, or you watch like some pro train, and it just kind of like, it's been like a source of motivation for you ever since. But that was that one kind of like image in my head, like I've always had.
Well, first of all, I had no idea that you trained in Edmonton at Hardcore Gym at the time. So it's definitely a very, very small world. Let me say that first of all. And yeah, I remember those days doing those weight pull-ups. I actually started doing them back in England when I trained at a world famous gym called Muscleworks in Bethnal Green. I trained there for about 7 years. And when I moved to Canada, I moved to Edmonton. And that was when I started training at Hardcore Health and Fitness. I was actually pretty consistently training there. There was Ron Partlow trained there. He was at the time a top amateur. So there was a lot of inspiration at that gym, but that's pretty cool that you can remember. It's funny that I actually found that yellow shirt that you mentioned earlier. I think it says huge on the front of it. So it's obviously a very, very big for me right now, being I've dropped a lot of muscle, but I still have the t-shirt. So it's very, very cool that you were there in those days. Really, really cool. Awesome.
So yeah. who was your inspiration, Troy? Trevor's, you're one of Trevor's inspirations. I honestly, like, my inspirations were, I used to train with a triathlete in my early 20s, and he was 62 years old,
wow,
former Ironman. And this guy could do like 50, 60 pull-ups, like after running like 10 miles. He was like my inspiration for sure. So who was yours growing up, and what made you get deep into this game?
Well, I think first of all, I want to say that triathlons, those triathlete guys, you guys are on a different planet, definitely the fittest people on earth, first of all. For me, my hero, so to speak, was definitely a man named Sean Ray. I had him when I just started getting into bodybuilding. Honestly, you can ask my brother, I had images and pictures of him all over my room. It was like a shrine of Sean Ray. And I used to study his posing routines over and over and over again. I could actually pervade him do a lot of his transitions. So he was my idol for years. And then I remember watching Dexter Jackson compete at the 99 Mr. Olympia. And I was like, he's another guy. So I was always into the balanced symmetrical guys. I was never into the mass monsters, even though I really looked up to Dorian. He was someone that helped me a lot in my career, but I was never really appealed towards the big mass monster. It was always like those nice lines, classic lines, a physique that was pretty symmetrical and nicely balanced. Those were my ideal physiques. And Sean Ray didn't have a weak body part on him. So he was my idol for sure.
So with how professional bodybuilding is going now, with like the big Rammies, what are your thoughts on that? Do you kind of like the direction that the sport is headed, or are you now more of a fan of more like the classic physique type of look?
That's a really, really good question, Trevor. I think for me now, definitely the sport's changed a lot. And I feel now, and I could be wrong, I might get a little bit of hate for this, but I feel like bodybuilding is sort of not dying, but what seems to have more of appeal to the general population is the men's physique and the classic. But I'm definitely a huge fan of classic. If classic was around when I was competing, I definitely would have loved to have tried that, because the problem for me was, Trevor, I was so short. I'm only 5'6". So as I put on muscle over the years, because I was naturally, in the beginning of my first 10 shows, I was naturally a middleweight. I was competing around 173 pounds. And when I went to super heavy, even though I put on a lot of tissue, I found that my waist got really, really big being short. So I would have definitely would have loved to done the classic, because it would have definitely kept me leaner on my off seasons, allowed me to stay healthier, and more importantly, kept all my lines, which is for me what bodybuilding is about. I preach to my clients that you want to be a good ambassador of bodybuilding, meaning you got to be in shape year round and you have to be healthy and you need to have some type of a six pack year round. That way you're putting the sport in a good light. And more importantly, as I said earlier, you are a good ambassador for the sport. So I like the classic physique, because those guys stay in shape year round.
And then also you don't have to turn yourself into like a freaking science experiment.
Absolutely. And that's something that, you know, unfortunately, you know, being a pro and you turn pro and you didn't really have the right guidance, you know, you do become this human dartboard, if you will. And luckily, thank goodness, I had a good coach in my corner, Harold Marulia, who taught me everything about, you know, the science of the sport, and he really kept me healthy. So I owe a lot to that gentleman. He lives out in England. He was the reason why I turned pro, because he was a pro himself. He's from South Africa. And I used to idolize him and study him, what he did on a daily basis, how he scheduled his meals, how he prepared meals, how he conducted himself in front of people. He was just a great ambassador for the sport. And he really taught me the ins and outs of how to stay healthy and to stay in shape year round. But when I moved to the States or moved to North America, that's when I started working with other coaches, and their protocols are, unfortunately, more is better, if you know what I mean. The beast mode mentality, you know, doing more, that doesn't necessarily mean better. It just means they are into, you know, more food, bigger cycles. And unfortunately, some people aren't even around to tell the tale. As we know, there's a lot of young people that are having heart issues, and I've lost a lot of friends in the sport as well. So it's we all know the dangers, and I feel that there needs to be a little bit more education in the sport. And people, especially the younger guys that are coming up through the ranks, I'm hearing horror stories about some of these younger guys taking excessive amounts of anabolics, and it does catch up with you. So you got to look after yourself. That's your investment, and you have to look after your body.
Yeah, this morning, actually, I'm showing this, but I actually got blood drawn this morning to get my blood work done. So I tell everybody, you know, please run blood work so you know what the hell is going on. I actually had a really bad migraine on Sunday. I'm not really sure what caused it. I think we were talking pre-show that I live in a beach town. So I went to the beach like for 5 hours in the hot sun. And I think that probably gave me the headache. But just in case that's something listening to your body, maybe something is going on. So that's why I went this morning and got blood work just to see. So how often do you recommend guys to get blood work, Troy?
That's a really, really good question, Steve. I think bottom line, if you are in the sport of bodybuilding, you're a top amateur professional bodybuilder, then you got to be running blood work. I would say minimum every 5 to 6 months because you want to see what's going on. And I think just for peace of mind and, you know, just to keep you mentally stable, because a lot of guys that I knew in the sport, unfortunately, never did their blood work. And you just don't know, right? So why leave it a chance? So I think it's imperative as an athlete in any sport, you should get your blood work done on a consistent basis. So I think every 5 to 6 months is suffice.
The number one excuse I hear people say on why they don't get blood work done is, oh, I feel fine. Mm-hmm. But the problem is once you start feeling like crap, it's usually too late and you've already done serious damage to your organs.
Absolutely.
And me and Troy, we live in Canada. We have no excuse. It's free. You guys in the States, it costs you like $60. And one thing that always blew my mind is someone will drop, you know, $1,000 a month on growth hormone, $1,000 a month on gear, you know, take every single supplement under the sun. I'm talking like these pre-workout things, which are basically just like caffeine, like aminos, like they're basically like the freaking cupboard looks like a science experiment with all their supplements they're taking, but they won't spend $60 on blood work twice a year.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And that's the thing I think with so many athletes is we live in a society where we live in a microwave society where we want instant gratification. We want instant results. And sometimes in this sport, you've got to do your time. You have to put in a lot of patience, and also you have to be extremely persistent and just know that muscle building takes time. But like you said, you have to, it's imperative. You want a long career like Dexter Jackson, you know, Flex Lewis, those guys that keep themselves healthy year round, then you have to be doing consistent blood work. I know Flex Lewis gets his blood work done on a consistent basis too. And he has to because he's a champion, but he also wants to leave a legacy. So you got to look after your investment. You have to. If you don't, you're going to pay the price once you reach like your late 30s, you know, early 40s. So, and I know that for a fact because I know a lot of people that have a lot of issues now that were been in the sport for 20 plus years and now they have complications.
And, can I ask you, you said you were 5'6". What are the rest of your stats right now, Troy? Age, weight, all that good stuff, body fat?
I just turned 41 a couple of days ago, so I'm not a spring chicken anymore. Right now, I'm sitting around 220 pounds. Mm-hmm. I'm completely off everything now. I've cleared my system out. I've been clean now for about just over a year now, so and I'm feeling great. Have a lot of energy. I get up at 4:30, 5:30 every morning. I feel great. I do cardio in the morning. And I train completely different now due to having a – that's what forced me to retire, guys, was I tore my pec in 2015 on my comeback to the bodybuilding world. So I wanted to compete again after taking a six-year sabbatical. And I also tore my tricep in 2010. So, and that's due to neglect and not looking after my body, not stretching enough, not doing mobility, not taking the time to get consistent treatment done with a masseuse or chiropractic treatments and so forth. So it was my own fault. And if I could turn back the clock, and what I encourage a lot of these younger guys is to get consistent treatments done on a regular basis. That way they keep their body optimal.
Do you think mobility too is an issue? Because that's what I blame for. I tore my rotator cuff about 3 years ago. And I noticed my mobility was extremely poor just because I was building muscle and strength and I wasn't, you know, getting the mobility done. So when I started doing these mobility exercises, I was like, wow, I really struggle with this. And then the more I did it, the more, it became evident that I was actually not doing everything I needed to do. So do you do any yoga, mobility exercises, stuff like that as well?
That's interesting you say, Steve. I just had Mr. Ben Pakulski on my podcast about 3 weeks ago, and we were really talking about the benefits of yoga. So it's definitely something that is on the cards that I need to do. and I do mobility every single day. I also, I spend probably about 20 minutes warming up and also cooling down. I do some type of mobility drills post-workout as well. But I also do 1 or 2 days on my rest day where I devote a whole hour to stretching and mobility. And I have to now. And I find that when I do it now, my training is so much better. I've got a better mind muscle connection too at the same time. And I just wish, you know, if I could have turned back the clock, I should have done all this in my previous years as a competitor. I think the problem was, you know, sitting at 265 pounds in my off season, being 5'6", you don't really have the energy to do anything. You just have enough energy to train and get by. And being that heavy at my height is extremely hard on the organs. So I wonder why now I wasn't able to think right. And being on all the drugs as well, I think high testosterone, I think it does something to your thinking capacity as well. So you're not razor sharp, and it really has some type of issue later on as you get older, you know, staying on high amounts of testosterone. So now that I'm completely off, it's interesting that I'm able to think better. I meditate every single morning, which is something, again, I would have loved to have done in my career, because I always, as bodybuilding, if you're a pro, you always want this thing in front of you. You want to always compete at Olympia. You want more, you want more. And sometimes as a pro or an amateur, top amateur, we need to be more present and we need to be more mindful. And that's something that I've learned through meditation and obviously through personal professional development as well.
I just want to say this, we've had lots of guests on from all ages. And it's funny that once these guys get into their 40s, their perspective changes. Like our last guest said, he doesn't care if he ever put another ounce of muscle.
Yeah.
But then when we got Boston Lloyd on, who's 20 years younger, he's like, I'm running if it fits your syringe as far as trend. So he's running as much trend as he can. So it's different, the mentality, how it changes. And I went through it myself too. I had that epiphany in my mid-30s. And so it's amazing how that works. And Trevor's kind of going through that right now. He quit competing, I believe, as well.
Yes, you made a great point. I think once we reach, you know, our mid-30s, you know, 40 as an example, I read Think and Grow Rich a lot every single day. And he talks about how these great individuals really start to take on a life of their own once they reach the age of 40. They start thinking better. And I think a lot of these successful men that he talks about, Napoleon Hill, they just are individuals that only enable themselves to improve their life once they reach the age of 40. That's when everything changes. So you made a great point there. I think before 40, I think for bodybuilding, for me, it was all about what I could get. And now I'm in my 40s now, it's about how can I give, how can I serve, how can I give more? So your perception completely changes. It does a 180.
So I completely agree with what you said about mindset, Troy. And I actually have a sport psychologist book for the end of the month, because I find that once you've been bodybuilding, you know, maybe 5, 6, 7 years, you almost hit like a knowledge cap. Like you're obviously still learning about training. You're obviously still learning about nutrition, but you've kind of figured out about 80% of it, if you know what I mean, right? And I feel what really takes a good physique to a great physique isn't changing 8 ounces of chicken breast to 7.5. And you know, instead of doing squats with, you know, your feet 15 degrees pointed out, you know, 25 degrees pointed. Like, I think all that stuff is kind of irrelevant in the big picture. I think it's really the mindset.
Absolutely.
I'm really interested to pick this woman's brain and see what she does with professional athletes to get their mind to the next level. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the best athletes, like you look at like Michael Jordan, Tom Brady, like any of those big names, they never talk about their training and their nutrition. They always talk about their visualization, their mental approach.
You are, I think you're such in alignment with my philosophies. And again, you wake up once you reach a certain age. And I think mindset is everything. I mean, I look at all these great people that are in the sport that are doing very well. They have a great coach, first of all. They have a great mentor in their corner that understands the mindset component. So I believe that the body is an instrument of the mind, you know, and whatever the mind's going to do, the body's going to follow. So you do have to program it. And in the beginning, it's extremely tough, but through repetition and being consistent, you know, you can change your subconscious mind, you can change a paradigm, but it takes work and it takes effort, but you have to be open to it as well. But that's why I'm such a key component of meditation and why I promote it so much to my clients. In the beginning, yes, it's hard because it's a new habit, but if you keep doing it consistently day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, you're going to become an expert at it and you're going to be able to do your 10,000 hours. So mindset is everything. It really is. If you want to become the best in any sport, in any entrepreneurship endeavor, you got to get the mind right and you got to do it in the bookends, meaning the morning and the night. So what the first thing you do when you wake up in the morning, you got to program yourself. I'm a great believer of auto-suggestion, meaning incantations, affirmations, and also, you know, reading a good book every morning, 10 pages first thing in the morning, meditation first thing, reading a good book, and on top of that, doing your affirmation, and last thing before night, doing your affirmations again, reading some type of self-confidence formula, which is what I do every night and every morning when I wake up. And it's just because now I'm in this position now where it's not about me anymore. I did this for 25 years. It was all about Troy, the bodybuilder. Take, take, take. How much can I get? I didn't really think about anybody else. It's a selfish sport, as we know. It's probably the most selfish sport there is in the world. And when you step away from it, you realize how selfish you've been. And now it's all about how can I leave a legacy? How can I make an impact on the planet? And that's why I'm really driving home with my transformation programs and my Apex Physiques business, the Apex Life business, because I really want to, this is my way of giving back and way of serving others to live a healthy, abundant lifestyle. As cliche as it sounds.
So I just saw one more question. Is there anything else you can add to that? Because you said you worked with the coach in Britain and then came to Canada. But what else besides what you mentioned, kind of a little tidbit you can give to people to stay healthy that you wish you could rewind and do differently?
I think you said it earlier, Steve, blood work. You know, consistent blood work, getting that done every 6 months is imperative as an athlete, and making sure that you're putting good information in your mind. I mean, you know, the basic stuff, surrounding yourself with the right individuals, the law of association, you are who you associate with. These things are important, especially if you're trying to get somewhere and you do need a good coach in your corner. You do need a good mentor, a mentor that basically has what you want. I think that's important. And someone that has a proven track record is also important as well. So I just think, you know, making sure that you set yourself up for success and know that if you hit failure, you hit roadblocks, it's just part of your life. I mean, I'm not sure if we're going to go into any of the stories and trials and tribulations that I've been through. I just put a message up on my Instagram a couple of days ago about, you know, being this broke bodybuilder, you know, struggling, trying to get contracts, trying to make a living in the sport. And it's been extremely hard while I moved to Canada. It was, I've been homeless twice in my life and, you know, been, literally had to start over from scratch three times while being in this country. And it's taken me 2 years to get to this position where I am right now. But there were times where I was thinking, guys, I'm just going to go back to England and just start over because I can't take this anymore. And I was 40 years old last year and I had minus $15 in the bank account and thinking, what am I going to do next? You know, I'm 40 years old. I have nothing to show for my life. And I have a son in England and I have a girlfriend that fully supports me and I'm struggling. And I was in major depression for about 8 months. And it took some work and the things that I've learned about the mind to get out of it. And I'm still going for it now, but I have to consistently do the mind work. I have to consistently do the meditation. Otherwise, it's very, very easy to slip back into those old habits.
Troy, what are your thoughts on coming off? What really terrifies me is I see these young guys, I mean, like they're 25, they're 26, and they're already blasting and cruising.
Yeah. Yeah. You hear about these bridge cycles that people do. I'm off right now, but I'm on the bridge. You're not off. You're not having a break. You're still taking stuff. So it's very paramount in this country. I'm finding in North America, it's the mentality here is more is better. Honestly, I've done it three times in my career where I didn't take anything for 6 years. When I came back in 2015, I went back on again. And I just knew intuitively it was the wrong thing to do. Here I am starting back again, putting all these substances back into my body. And I already built my mind and I already created such a good awareness that I was putting all these chemicals back into my body. And I think that could have been one of the reasons why I got injured, why I tore my pec and my tricep. But it's honestly, it's so hard to go to stop and go cold turkey, because you have this mindset of walking around and you're oppressing everyone, and people stop you in the street and they people look at you, or they're driving past you in the car and they go, holy crap, you look amazing. And all of a sudden you come off everything, you become healthy, and you don't get that attention anymore. And that does something to your ego. So I can understand why some of these younger guys don't want to come off. And if you don't, I mean, I've known so many people that stay on year round, have had all kind of heart issues. Some have not even been able to live to tell the tale, unfortunately. But you got to have breaks. You got to take time off. You have to. You can't keep pounding the compounds day after day, week after week, month after month. The body won't allow it. And whatever you do negatively, it has a consequence. It's like the law of cause and effect. What you put out must come back. So if you're putting out and abusing your body on a consistent basis, it's going to catch up with you. So bodybuilding is such a tough sport. And it, for me, honestly, guys, it was the hardest thing to let go. And I still have problems with it now. Now it's the Mr. Olympia, everyone's getting ready for the show, and I'm looking on Instagram, and that part of you still has that urge to compete. And sometimes I just meditate on it, and I'm thinking, you know, I ask for guidance, I ask the universe, you know, what is my calling? What is my purpose? And I know what it is now. And that seems to override that feeling of wanting to compete again, because it is such a, I love bodybuilding and the discipline that it teaches you, but there's also a lot of negative issues if you're not doing it right. And that's what I'm trying to coach a lot of these younger athletes is, but I think they're so entrenched in it, it's very, very hard to get a good idea into their subconscious mind. I think they're just so closed-minded, you can't even put a good idea into their mind, even if you tried.
After the Dallas McCarver death, I did an interview with RX Muscle on cardiovascular health for bodybuilders. I'm actually doing my thesis on cardiovascular health.
That's amazing, and by the way.
What people forget, and this is something I really don't see anyone talking about, is that steroids decrease collagen synthesis in the body,
mm-hmm.
right? Collagen is the most abundant protein in the human body. Your skin, your hair, your teeth, your bone, your nails, it's all made of collagen. What people don't realize is that also your cardiovascular system is made of collagen.
Right.
Now, the problem with that is you can be on, let's say you're blasting and cruising, you've been on 10 years, you get your blood work done, you get your cholesterol checked, you get your blood pressure done, it's all good. None of those tests are testing the health of your arteries and your cardiovascular system.
Mm-hmm.
It is not a coincidence that pretty much every bodybuilder dies of some sort of cardiovascular disease. So that's part of the reason you want to come off. And that's part of the reason you want to be supplementing with things that promote collagen synthesis, is because steroids decrease collagen synthesis in the body. And what happens is your arteries, they become very, very stiff. They're not elastic anymore. And then it's just a matter of time before eventually you get a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense, right? If you have this stiff artery, and then let's say you're in a stressful situation, you're driving, basically you get in a fight with your girlfriend, you're driving, someone cuts you off. It's like stressful situation, stressful situation, stressful situation. Your heart starts pounding. You got all this blood that's trying to go through this narrow artery. Boom, heart attack, you're dead.
Yep. And it happens. We've seen it happen time and time again. And it seems to be more prevalent now than ever before. There seems to be more deaths in the sport now than there was, you know, maybe 20, 30 years ago. So there's definitely maybe there's so many different compounds that are coming out now. Maybe there's different peptides and so forth, you know, different drugs coming on the market now. Maybe that has some type of influence. I don't know. But
what it is, Troy, is people aren't coming off.
Yeah.
Because the human body is designed to heal, right? So you do a 10, 12, 16 week cycle. You basically destroy your body's collagen. But then you come off for 16 weeks, your body can repair that protein, right?
Absolutely.
But if you're on the whole time, even if you're on just a TRT dosage, and like, let's be real, most guys are running like 500 milligrams per week for TRT.
That's, oh yeah, minimum.
That's not TRT. I'm like, that's like a freaking cycle. But anyways, you're never giving your body a chance to heal. It would almost be like going to the gym twice a day, 7 days a week, and training legs. Your legs are never going to grow because you're constantly breaking them down. And eventually your knee or something's going to give out because your body just can't deal with all the constant stress. And that's what's happening is guys are never coming off. They're decreasing their collagen synthesis on a long-term basis. And then eventually just something gives.
Yeah. And I'm so grateful that you're bringing this information out to the forefront and telling people about it, because people need to know. They need to understand what they're doing to their body, you know, internally. And I think someone like you, you know, needs to really be telling and parading this out on social media as much as possible, because people just don't know that they don't know. They're what I call unconscious incompetence. And they're just, like you said, they're just constantly not coming off year after year. And then they wonder why they're having all these issues and side effects. So I'm so grateful and glad that you're bringing this to the marketplace, because it needs to be said. And there needs to be more advocates like you, you know, preaching this, because it can get to the point where it's too late. I'm just so grateful. Maybe if I would have kept on doing what I was doing, I mean, I always had a health component and more of a holistic approach to bodybuilding anyway, but still, you know, you're still putting, you know, something foreign in your body, and it does have a price at the end of the day. So I'm just glad that someone like yourself is really out there, you know, leading the way and telling people about the issues of constant abuse of steroids.
I think one of the big things,
and then I'll let you finish up. And like, so I just want to say for the record, Steve and myself were not anti-steroids by any means. If you listen to this podcast, we talk about steroids almost on every single podcast. But it's that age-old saying, everything in moderation. So, mm-hmm. right? So let's say you're going to do a show, 16 weeks, you're going to gear up, you know, especially if you're going to run heavy androgens like Tren. I'm not saying don't do those things. I'm just saying once the show is done, you need to recover. You need to spend just as much time on recovery as you did on your cycle.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm trying to preach, is like, I'm not trying to be this greater than God person saying, oh, don't do steroids. If you do steroids, you're going to die. No. 90% of my clients are on gear. You know, like a lot of people pay me to write them steroid cycles. What I'm saying is, if you're going to take steroids, you need to make your health a priority. And once that cycle is done, you need to focus on recovering. And then also, this is a very selfish sport. So I kind of tell people, if you're going to do a 16-week contest prep, that 16 weeks is devoted to you. It's going to put a lot of strain on your relationships, on your girlfriend, things like that. Once that show is done, you need to be giving back to your body, giving back to your relationships. That's the time where, you know, you tell your girlfriend, hey, I know you've always wanted to go to Paris or whatever. Let's go to Paris for a week. You're not a D-bag who's got meals in his backpack and is eating, you know, every 2 hours on the train and pissing people off. You're actually giving back.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I had a relationship of 7 years prior to the relationship I'm in right now. And now that I'm out of not bodybuilding anymore, I realized why that relationship broke up, because it was a selfish sport and I was extremely take and not giving back. And that's why that relationship come to an end. And you are so, so right, Trevor, that you have to give back to your relationship, especially if you've done a 16 week prep, because what we do as bodybuilders, we push everybody that we love away from us because we're so laser focused and we have these blinders on, and all we focus on is competing and getting on that stage and winning. And we sacrifice our relationship, we sacrifice our friends, everybody that's important in our lives, for no disrespect, I love bodybuilding, for a plastic trophy. But you got to get back to your relationship. It's important, because when the bodybuilding's done, I know so many older gentlemen that they're still bodybuilding, they're still putting their body under intense pressure, because they want to keep competing, but they're lonely. They don't have anybody in their lives because it's all about them, and they're just constantly, you know, taking and not giving back. So I'm really glad that you brought that up. And that was important to me in this relationship that I'm in now with Jasmine, is that now that I'm still training, don't get me wrong, I'm still living the lifestyle. I try and at least once a week do some type of date night, because I learned my lesson in my previous relationship, and that's why that relationship came to an end, unfortunately.
I think it's interesting, though. I think the epiphany stage for young men, the narcissistic stage and the selfishness stage, you eventually grow out of that. And I think that's a really damn good reason why guys should really wait to use steroids. They shouldn't be hopping on steroids at 18, 19, 20, or even 25.
Yeah.
I mean, because let's say you hit the epiphany at 35, but you start using steroids at 18, you're abusing your body for all that time. And like what Trevor said about the collagen situation, you're breaking your body down. So that's why I tell people, you know, wait till you're like 30 to use steroids and use them responsibly. Because if you start using them too soon, that's that big gap of time, you know, that you've destroyed your body, you know, because steroids do break your body down over time. So, I mean, with that, I know Trevor, you know, he used steroids really, really young, and he wishes he could take it back. I waited till I was like 28, 29. I actually wish I waited a little longer. And with that, Troy, how old were you when you first used steroids?
It's a good question. I remember I used to be a pro soccer player. And I remember I think I started using after about 5 years of natural training. And I realized that I could do something as a bodybuilder. So I think I started at age 24. I was 24. Yes, 24 is when I originally started. Yeah.
You know what my epiphany moment was, Troy? So I've been competing since I was 15. I did my first show when I was 15. I was a really weird kid. I mean, I've always loved bodybuilding. When I finally won that pro card, the day everyone's DMing you on Instagram, you're Mr. Popular, and you're like, wow, I've made it. The next day you wake up, you're still the same person. Nothing changes. People think like there's this pot of gold once you win this pro card, and then you're going to get 5 emails from Muscle Tech and All Max. And it's, hey, we want to sponsor you. How does $10,000 a month sound? No, none of that happens. You go to the average person on the street, you say, hey, I'm a professional bodybuilder. They're like, so what does that mean?
Yeah.
Do you like, they don't even know what it is. They're like, oh, so like you lift weights. I'm like, no, that's powerlifting. I'm a bodybuilder.
Yeah.
You're like, well, what's bodybuilding? They're like, and you kind of explain to them, oh, well, like I flex my muscles on stage in my underwear. And they're like, well, that seems kind of childish.
Yeah.
Like the average person isn't even impressed.
Yeah.
Like they think you're like narcissistic and do nothing but eat chicken breasts and take steroids.
You know, it's interesting when I turned pro, when I beat Flex Lewis and Zach Kahn, I remember driving home that same night. I was down. I was sad because I put all this energy for 10 years and focus onto becoming a pro. Now I've done it. I'm like, what do I do now? I kind of was a little bit sad for a few days, and I can remember that like it was yesterday. And I think when you turn pro, you work on getting your face known as much as possible, and you understand that it is a political sport. You got to get the judges to know who you are. So you spend a good 9 years doing that. And then when you turn pro, you have to do it all over again, especially coming from England. You know, you do have to really leverage, the more shows you can do, the better. But now I think it's a lot easier because of social media. You can get known a lot faster. And unfortunately, no disrespect to anybody that has their pro card recently, but they seem to be giving pro cards out like candy now. And I remember it was all about the best bodybuilder who wins the overall will get their pro card. And that's what it was about. And I think that's probably why so many great bodybuilders have come from England, is because there's one shot, one opportunity, one chance for you to get your pro card. And it all basically boils down to that one individual that gets it right on the day. But that's how it should be, you know, one shot, one opportunity. And unfortunately now it seems to have lost that appeal now, maybe because there's different federations and different categories. There seems to be multiple pro cards being handed out, especially in North America as well. So it's kind of maybe, I don't know if I'm wrong here to say that, and I don't want to piss anybody off, but it seems to be, doesn't really have that appeal as it used to being an IFBB pro. And I remember when Dorian, he was the messiah in England and everybody wanted to be like Dorian. And I think that's the mentality that we have from the UK. It's kind of a different mentality altogether. We have that hardcore element, if you will, the spit and sawdust gyms. You know, when you come to North America, all the gyms are nice and luxurious and they got great equipment. Back in England, it's just, you know, everyone spits on the floor. You got plates and dumbbells everywhere and there's a mess in the toilet and stuff like that. So I love that energy and that environment of that hardcore factor. And I think that allows you to really bring that to North America, and people can feel that you're from that hardcore environment, if you will.
So, and that's fascinating that you said that. I've been to London one time in my life, and I noticed that, it's a little, the people are definitely weird. To me, they're weird. But then again, people from Canada are weird. I think Trevor's incredibly weird. He's a weirdo to me, too.
So. but isn't weird.
But what's the deal in Britain now with gyms versus what you see in North America in terms of, you know, is there a lot of franchise gyms popping up over there? How is it different? You know, that's kind of fascinating. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I think, first of all, the hardcore gyms in England are very rare. There's probably, I would say in London, there's probably maybe a handful of hardcore gyms. But all the best bodybuilders in London, especially in Manchester, which is up north, we call it, there is, you know, maybe three or four hardcore gyms that all the best athletes would train at. And that was a reason for me traveling for 2 hours when I lived in Southeast London. I would travel to East London just so I could be in the energy of training in Muscle Works in Bethnal Green, because that's where all the great champions trained. You know, the likes of JD Duardo and Charles Claremont, people that had I grew up to and I read in the magazines, that's where these guys trained. So just to be in that energy, you are who you associate with. You're seeing these pros and these high-level national athletes train, and you're watching them, and you're like kind of that fly on the wall. It's going to rub off on you because you are who you associate with. So that was the reason why I would travel all over the place to train at these gyms, just so I could get any energy of these great champions. And I think coming to North America, there's so many gorgeous gyms, like great equipment, beautiful hammer strength, nice and clean, nice and tidy, and it's great. Now that I'm retired, you know, I don't get me wrong, I can train at a local anytime gym and no one knows who I am, and that's amazing. So I don't look to train to compete to put on size anymore. I just train for good health and just to maintain some lean muscle tissue so I can at least look the part for my clients. But yeah, it's a good gym is very rare to find this day and age. I think because there's so much competition, like you said, Steve, there's so many franchise gyms, and in England now they seem to be popping up left, right, and center. There's so many of them. We were just out there last year, November, and I could not believe, going back to England prior to that was 2014 to 2017, there was like in 3 years multiple gyms, like multiple franchises coming up all over the place. So it was really, really interesting to see how much fitness is growing in England.
And is diet and workouts drastically different between England and the United States? Most of our forum, I'd say 90-95% of our forum is Americans or Canadian. And then we have, you know, a few people like in Asia, a few people in England. So I'm just curious about that diet and training. Did you notice like a big difference when you came to North America, the way people approach things?
It's a good question. I think in England, bodybuilding is very, such a small community of people. It's so small, not a lot of people. It's very underground, if you will. Whereas when you come to North America, it's very health conscious. That's what I found anyway. And I think being in the fitness industry, being a trainer for so many years, everybody I feel, and especially in Canada, I don't know what it's like in the States, maybe in San Diego, places like that, but everyone is very, very health conscious. Everybody works out, no matter what demographic they're from. Everybody's training, everybody's, you know, living a fairly healthy lifestyle. Whereas in England, and I love my country, a lot of people aren't as health conscious, unfortunately. That's just my opinion.
And then what about like this is an oddball question. I let Trevor get back to fitness, but what about the women? How are the women in England? Because I like Saoirse Ronan. I know she's Irish, but wow, she is a beautiful woman. Are the women over there beautiful? Or are they like, you say women in North America are better looking?
I've always liked Canadian women anyway, to be honest with you. But I feel like when I was living in England, if you're a bodybuilder, the women don't get it. And they see a man with muscle and they kind of get turned off. And I mean, I'm talking about back in, you know, the early 2000s, you know, mid 2000s. And I remember going to, you know, certain bars, which was a rare occasion. And, you know, women would not give you the time of day. If you had some muscle on you, they would sort of turn a blind eye. It's like they would prefer a guy with a little bit of a beer belly over a guy that has muscles. Whereas if you come to this country, you have an accent and you have a physique, you know, they think you're Michael Jackson. So, you know, it's definitely different, a different mentality in North America as opposed to England. Now, I think maybe there's more gyms popping up all over the place. People are becoming more health conscious. Maybe the ladies in England are focusing on men that have a bit of physique, which is good. And I think it's a good thing, you know, as long as they don't abuse it like some of us do in this sport.
Do you know the one problem with Canadian women, Troy?
What's that?
You can't see anything. When it's January, they got snow pants on, they got a parka on, they got a hat on. It's almost like when you go to India and they're wearing like that full black veil and you got to just, you can only see their eyes. It's kind of like the Canadian version of that.
That's a good point. I never actually thought of it that way. I think people cover up in the winter because it's so freaking cold. But yeah, I never actually thought of that. I just love the Canadian people in general. I just think they're so friendly, so courteous. And I live in a very small town out here in Ontario, and people are just so nice. And regardless how you look, you know, everyone talks to you. Everyone's, you know, willing to have a conversation with you. And living back in England, I remember working as a trainer, leafleting and giving out leaflets to people for the gym. And people, you know, throw the leaflet on the ground and they give you a dirty look. And I just find Canadians are a lot more happy. I mean, don't get me wrong, we were just in England last year and it definitely seems to be a lot different. But depending on the time of year too, when there's a lot more sunshine, I think the English people tend to be a little bit happier. But when it's dark and gloomy in the fall and in the winter, I think that really does something to your psyche, because it's you don't see much daylight in England, unfortunately, especially as a trainer. I used to say to people, I would work from dark 30 in the morning to dark 30 at night and you wouldn't see the daylight. So no wonder I was moody and depressed all the time.
This is something me and Steve always laugh about off air. This is episode 191.
Oh, congratulations, you guys.
We've interviewed tons of people. Whenever we interview a Canadian, it's, thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm so happy to be here. What a great opportunity. Whenever we have an American, it's, okay, so when do we start recording?
Right. I see. Yeah. Canadians are just nice people. I'm probably going to be, my phone's going to not stop ringing now. You're a nice guy, Troy. Thank you. No, I really mean that. I think Canadians are really nice. Don't get me wrong. I love the States too. If I had the option in the beginning, I wished my previous partner was from, you know, LA, you know, because of the weather. But I'm just grateful to be in this magnificent country, because there's so much opportunity here and it's so big and spacious, and everything, cost of living seems to be a little bit better than London as well. So I just feel it's a nice environment, especially now where the weather's great in Ontario. It's beautiful. We live right on the lake right here on the bay, and in the winter it's very depressing, but come summer it's gorgeous.
Steve, do you have anything? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, are we, you know, so, you know, we only have about 15 minutes left. Give us a little bit of a background as far as your training and your training protocols, because I looked into that a little bit. What kind of people are you training? Is it just bodybuilders or is it just normal Joes?
That's a good question. In the beginning, when I moved to North America, I had, I would say 80% were competitors, 20% were just a general population. Now it's the complete opposite. It's the reverse of that. So we seem to attract the gen population clients, and a majority of those are women, potentially stay at home moms. So we design like home programs, home workouts for these moms that just really want to be able to take care of themselves and, you know, be able to leave an impression on their children. So definitely gen population is our sort of demographic, if you will. We don't get us wrong. We still train with the competitors. Like I said, we don't really advertise as much, but where we really feel as though we can make more of an impact is the gen population, because I feel that now so many moms, so many dads focus on giving so much to others that they neglect themselves. And then they wake up, you know, and they're 20 pounds, 50 pounds overweight, and they realize, like, what the hell have I been doing? So those are the people that we love to help, just to, you know, help them with their mindset, and also just get them, you know, thinking about taking care of themselves so they're in a better position to take care of others.
Most of our listeners are actually just gym rats, you know, normal Joes. So very few actually compete. So this is really good. So give us obviously we don't have time to get into your, you know, diet and training programs. Give us a little bit of a sneak preview so that people can kind of get a taste of, you know, what you're doing, what you're seeing when people come to you, some mistakes that people are making on a day-to-day basis that they could switch around and get much better results in the gym. Because we all want to build muscle and lose fat. I mean, that's just common sense. And if you're a female, like stay-at-home mom, obviously the big goal is, you know, you want to get leaner, you want to lose the mommy belly and all that good stuff. So tell us a little bit of a sneak preview on a little bit about that.
Well, I think first of all, if you're talking about the stay-at-home moms, I think the mentality and what we seem to be, you know, focusing on in the beginning when we get their questionnaire back is they are in such a place where everything's fast paced. They just don't take the time to give back to themselves. And they're so stressed out. And they get to the point where they're tapped out and they say enough is enough. And they go down the depression road. Maybe they go down the Prozac road. And it's really sad to see that. But I can see how it happens, because they just neglect to take care of themselves. They're not working out. They take care of the family and they don't give back to themselves anymore. So where we come into it is we say, hold on a minute. You know, let's get our sleep right. Let's get the stress levels right. Let's start meditating. Let's start giving back. Let's start thinking about gratitude and the things that you're grateful for. Because at the end of the day, if you do these things, if you take care of yourself, you're just going to be in a far better position to be a happier person in you. And you're going to be able to attract better people into your life too. And the most important thing is that you become the role model of your kids, because kids basically are a model of their environment. They look up to their mom and dad. So whatever the mom and dad eats, the child's going to eat. So we really coached them on, in the beginning, the first 2 weeks is extremely hard for them because they're trying to invoke on new habits. And we understand that it takes around, 66 days to form a new habit. So we really have to be on top of them. But we really emphasize the why and the reason why they're doing it. Because sometimes if they go back to the why, it's going to enable them to override those bad habits that have been holding them back in the first place. So we really teach them the concepts of being grateful, and that's something that no one does this day and age, taking, you know, an hour out of their day just to give back to themselves, even if it's 30 minutes in the basement and they're doing an exercise workout, and just being able to put good foods back into their body, because they just work in such a fast-paced lifestyle that they hardly eat, they don't put any nutritious foods in their bodies, they don't drink any water, and they live on caffeine and stimulants all day long. And it's just, you know, it's a time bomb waiting to happen. So We reach out to these women and we just really give them a lot of value in the beginning and understand that they're more than just this mom taking care of the family. They actually think in the beginning that it's selfish to want to give back to themselves. But we say, wait a minute, stop. If you are healthy, if you are feeling optimal, you're just going to be a better role model for everybody that's in your circle of influence. So it's tough, because I believe as coaches, and you probably understand this, Trevor, is that we're always having to inspire and educate and motivate people to want to look after themselves. And I think it all comes down to self-love, self-confidence, and value. Do they value themselves? And that's where a good coach and mentor will come into it. So I'm not sure if I've kind of answered your question there. It's a little bit all over the place, but I think we're very passionate what we do, and we're just trying to wake people up, because we're seeing, like you said earlier, even not just in the bodybuilding industry, but more and more people are having diabetes, more and more people are having strokes and heart attacks now, you know, at younger ages, because stress is so, so high. But it all can be fixed, if you will, if they start going back and going from within and start focusing on breathing and intuition and meditation. But I think the problem with so many people, Steve and Trevor, is that we live in this microwave society. No one's patient anymore. They just want it all yesterday. And they're not willing to, like, and here's an example. We had a lady that's lived a certain lifestyle for so many years. And we do a bi-weekly check-in every 2 weeks. And she said, I've been following the program for 2 weeks and I've seen no changes. But she's been living this unhealthy lifestyle for so many years. She expects, people's mentality is they expect to undo it in 2 weeks. And unfortunately, as you guys know, it doesn't work that way.
One thing I always try to remind housewives, Troy, is that children are very impressionable, right? So if they see mom, she gets up, she's stressed, she slams a cup of coffee for breakfast. For lunch, she has another cup of coffee. Eventually, it's 6 p.m. She's ravenous because she hasn't eaten anything. She goes to McDonald's. She gets, you know, meal number three with a Diet Coke. The kid is going to see that and they're going to be like, well, that's what I should do, because that's what mom does, right? So when you tell them that, when you start taking care of yourself, when you start eating better, when you start exercising – yes, you're doing it for yourself, obviously, but even more important than that, that's the example you're setting for your children. So when your children see that, and when they grow up, they're going to realize, hey, eating proper food, this is important. Exercising 5 or 6 days per week, this is important. Praying, minimizing stress, all these things. Kids are very, very impressionable, right? So I try to remind housewives of that, is don't think you're doing this for yourself. Think this is the example you're setting.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Children are a model of their environment, and they do take on their mothers and fathers' behaviors. Here's an example. My dad is in England. He always ate chicken breasts. He never ate chicken drumsticks. He never ate chicken thighs. It was always chicken breasts. So what does Troy eat? I eat chicken breasts. I don't eat chicken drumsticks. I don't eat chicken thighs. My dad always told me that he never eats pork. Why? Because he always said that pork is a dirty animal. And I don't know if it's a Caribbean thing, being that my dad's from Jamaica, but I'm the same mindset now, the same philosophy. I'd never eat pork. So I eat exactly how my dad eats. So it's very, very interesting that you bring that up. The kids are, no question about it, they look up to their mother and father, even though the mom and dad don't even know it.
One thing I give my father total props to is that my dad's a university professor. He's a math professor, right? So he's very, very busy. But he always would weight train first thing in the morning, right? And I remember, you know, just being a little kid and looking up to my dad and seeing him weight train. And he was totally encouraging, right? Like, he'd be doing squats and then I would be doing squats beside him and like I would just do them body weight, right? But because I saw my dad weight training, running on the treadmill, all these sorts of things as a young kid, I started weight training as soon as I was allowed to get a gym membership and I was old enough. And that's why I've been weight training consistently since I was 13. It's because you look up to your parents and the actions they do, you are eventually going to encompass.
So cool. I love that. It's interesting. Such a cool, I was actually envisioning in my mind there, you working out with your dad. It's very similar. If you read the book, The Compound Effect with Darren Hardy, he talks about how his dad, 5 a.m. every single day when Darren was a kid, you'd hear him doing deadlifts, you know, all the big compound movements, cleaning presses, you know, overhead presses, squats, front squats, barbell rows, deadlifts, you name it. And all he would hear is an iron smash on the ground, you know, every single day. And obviously Darren has taken on those philosophies as well.
So what was that book called again?
It's called The Compound Effect, and okay, the author is called Darren Hardy. It's a great, great book. Amazing.
Any other books you can recommend? I've been reading, I've been trying to read like an hour and a half every evening, awesome, instead of watching TV. And I've been reading a lot of Dr. Jason Fung books. I don't know if you've read his books.
Yep. Yeah.
And he talks about meditation 1 hour a day and all that good stuff too. And he talks a lot about insulin too. So are there any books that you can recommend to our listeners that can really help them relax and tap into their, you know, Buddhism inside, as you can call it, just to kind of get that cortisol down? Because we all have this stressful life. Look how many gray hairs I have. I have one of the most stressful jobs. So I need to do that for sure.
Well, for me, my hair's falling out. So I'm on the same path as you there, Steve. But in regards to keeping people calm and more serene, the first book that comes to mind that's helped me so much, especially when I was going through depression, was As a Man Think of James Allen. There's a chapter in it called Serenity. And one thing that my old mentor got me to do when I was going through this tough time, he got me to write out that chapter every day for 30 days straight. And that had such a profound impact on me. I noticed a huge shift and a huge change in me. So James Allen, As a Man Think of, there's a chapter on Serenity, great book. And also I just purchased a book that we just started reading the other day. It's called The Buddha's Brain. I'm not sure the author is, but that was suggested by Ben Pekulski to me. Another good book that really comes to mind from a mindset component is The Gifts of Imperfection by Brené Brown is another great book. And then I would say one more book that's been a huge impact for me that I've been reading for 2 years straight now every single day is Think and Grow Rich, Napoleon Hill. It's a classic.
So Troy, for our listeners, if they want to get in contact with you to learn more about your services or maybe just follow you for a source of inspiration, what are some of your social media handles? What are your website? Things like that.
Oh, well, thank you so much for allowing me to share that with your listeners. You can find me on Instagram, The Troy Brown, and I have a website which specializes in physique and health transformation. It's called apexphysiques.ca. And then you'll also find me on Facebook. I have a coaching page called Coach Troy Brown, and also you'll find me on my other Facebook page, which is just Troy Brown. And I think that's pretty much it, really. I think I don't have any other LinkedIn, same thing, Troy Brown. You'll find me on there as well.
So for our listeners, I'm going to have all those social media outlets in the show notes, so you can just go and copy and paste them from there.
Thank you. Trevor, I appreciate that.
Hey, if you just did an hour interview and gave all this great knowledge, that we're going to at least let you plug your website.
Oh, I appreciate it, man. And all I'm trying to do is, you know, spread the mission like you're doing, you guys, spreading the word and, you know, trying to get the message out and trying to wake people up and trying to get them to take care of their mind and their body, because it's the only place we live in, right? So we got to treasure it. And even though it sounds cliche, this is our body temple. And when you're thinking better, you are naturally a better person. You become more attractive to everybody around you too. And you also are an inspiration to the people that are around you. And people want to follow people that know where they're going. So if you're on the mission of just telling people about getting their mind right and doing the basics, as I always say, do the basics, do them often and do them well consistently every single day, you're going to be so attractive. You're going to attract the right people into your life. So that's all we're trying to do. And all we're doing right now, guys, is that we just focus on, I think the switch for me when I hit 40 was, I'm not going to focus on getting anymore. I'm just going to focus on just become this person of generosity and you'll be taken care of. I really believe in that. And there's one of my other mentors, Michael Beckwith from LA. He talks about that. Just be generous. Just give every single day. And that's exactly what you two are doing right now, is you're giving free content, good information out so people can use it and hopefully take some action and do something with it.
I appreciate that a lot, Troy. I think this is the only podcast that doesn't have ads in it. I don't know. Does your podcast have ads in it?
Not yet. I've only just started podcasting. I've got about 30 episodes, so I'm pretty new to it. So definitely I need to come to you guys with some more advice on how to set up a successful podcast. But again, like you, I'm just trying to put the good information out and trying to, you know, provide value and help people.
What one thing that's kind of always bugged me is I'm a Christian, right? And I'll listen to a lot of Christian podcasts and they'll have like a 5 minute like Amazon ad in the middle of this like Christian podcast. And like I understand, like, you know, you gotta pay for your URL, you gotta pay for your hosting and everything like that, but kind of just like doesn't sit right with me when you're trying to like preach the gospel and then there's this like 5 minute ad on why you should buy your groceries online at amazon.com or whatever.
Yeah. I think that's a lot of these, you know, great podcasts that are out there. I just think, you know, they want to make more residual income and I can't blame them. I think that's the law of life, is that we want to grow. We want to be able to do more. We want to be able to make more so we can extend our presence beyond our reach. So the more money you make, the more you can give. But I can see why some of these big podcast people that are out there right now, that's why they have tons and tons of ads. And it does at some point, I mean, there's so many now. I mean, one podcast I was listening to the other day, I'm not going to mention the gentleman's name, but I think there was like four different types of commercials in his podcast. And I'm like, oh my goodness, just before you're getting into the nuggets and you're writing stuff down, there's another commercial. So sometimes it can be extremely frustrating for the listener and it can potentially turn people off too.
Guys, Troy is a really good guy. Follow him on Instagram. Check out his website. He's a genuine good person. For your host, Trevor Caritzen, for my co-host, Steve Smee, and for our special guest, IFBB Pro, Troy Brown, this has been another episode of Evolutionary Radio. Live your life, look good doing it. Thanks for listening.
Mm-hmm.